Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to an expert talk from May 2019. Mr. Graeme Rayburn, Performance Director Rayburn, presents The Beauty of Function. Is there a formula?
Good morning, everyone. I'm just going to start off by saying thank you very much to Nora for a wonderful presentation prior to this. It was great to hear from a true master. And another thank you to Klaus and the team here at Performance Days for this opportunity to speak. I'm such a big fan of Performance Days. For me, it's the most important show of the year. And it's great to just see it going from strength to strength and events like this happening with a forum for inspiration and education. So thanks to everyone on the team here at Performance Days. A brief introduction to myself. My name is Graeme Rayburn. I spent over 10 years working on performance sportswear for a company called Rafa. This is where we were looking at performance through optimizing for sports, so the fastest, the lightest, the most breathable. I've recently joined my younger brother at Christopher Rayburn, where we've rebranded to Rayburn as Performance Director. So my role now is actually looking at optimizing things that we can do around accountability, design responsibility, sustainability. So what can we actually do to make things better, make things more durable, make things cleaner? My topic today, I've been handed the theme around the beauty of function. It's something I'm really passionate and interested about, particularly relevant here within this within this hall. It's kind of a ramble. It's a bit of a meander around some of the topics and some of the themes. So my ambition here is to provoke and inspire kind of yourselves as a collection of creatives, designers, makers, people who are actually using these materials. So starting off with the original questions I kind of posed myself when handed this topic by Klaus, you know, where to actually start. So the kind of the obvious thing was to look into the idea, is there a formula, or is there a way that we can actually you know, quantify the idea around beauty? You hear the news of Google starting on fashion design through AI. So starting at the beginning here, the idea around the golden ratio, you know, we all know this theory that's kind of applied to these concepts of beautiful and balance and proportion. I'd say no, it's not really possible. You know, fashion trends, they're fleeting. It's a dynamic field we're working in. Applying a figure like this into something as sort of intangible and moving and such a fast-moving target as fashion and trend and aesthetics, it simply, you know, it doesn't make sense. Even the idea that this, the Parthenon was designed to fit the golden ratio, everyone would view it from kind of ground level. So actually the perspective is completely, you know, it's total nonsense. So you know, the myth of the golden ratio, it doesn't happen. And I'd say that, you know, as human beings, we're kind of automatically, we are programmed though to see forms, automatically see the human, identify faces in things, and the human form. It's a primal thing that's built into us. But what we do know is that actually we love stuff that's new, that's exciting, you know, that actually inspires us and grabs our attention in other ways. Another theory is around the arabesque, which is the concept around elegant flowing S-shaped lines which accentuate a form and heighten a shape, which obviously plays better into a fashion human form concept, but it's totally subjective and very, you know, it's quite esoteric, hard to define. But maybe that's the role of the designer, to actually master this field, this like more intangible aspect around beauty. But similarly, you know, with the arabesque can be pushed in all over the place, and this purely just demonstrates that actually it's a it's an artificial construct, this idea that is constantly moving and evolving, dependent on social, cultural, historic context as well. So what about some other themes that might drive us into making some decisions? And we talk about this balance between the rational and the emotional, where you might have the most sort of rational need case I could think of would be an astronaut suit, so designed entirely by engineers, completely driven by data, tested. And then on the other end, we've got a sort of slightly more intangible kind of fashion areas around the emotional space, where this is much more theatrics, and you could actually argue that this is there is a reason that there's actually a need around this area. And over here, you've got sort of in this space something like a grey pair of socks. We all need socks. It's not a very emotional purchase. You might argue a T-shirt is kind of slightly more emotional-led. What about the space up here? Like, what starts to occupy there, and for us to actually get a balance between the emotional desire and the actual, the rational, the performance, the functional aspects of this? This chap, William Morris, English designer, arts and crafts designer, came up with this fantastic quote, which sort of suggests it's maybe a binary field where they are sort of exclusive. Can the two things kind of exist? Nora had a slide previously as well that sort of suggests that when something becomes useful, it's no longer beautiful. Of course not. One of the reasons this area, this arena was of quite a lot of interest to me was that my graduate collection from the Royal College of Art in 2003, a long time ago now, was entitled A Reason for Beauty. And it looked at the way that the advent of the smartphone and the mobile phone was changing the way that we were moving, interacting, communicating, living in cities even. So the collection was designed purely around the functional needs of a layering system, pockets based on precisely actually what was going to be carried in them, the sort of standardized size of a credit card, wallet on the waistband, things like that. So this was sort of driven by a functional need, but also balanced with an aesthetic interpretation of those two things, which kind of starts to bring us into this space around the balance of the material and the immaterial. When we start thinking about design, the super easy tangible things to actually hold and touch. As designers, that often the value attributed to some of these things are purely financial. You know, we know the cost of the piece of fabric, or you know how much it's going to cost to get the perfect fit. But then into the emotional, the slightly more intangible arena, that when we buy a product, what are the additional things that come with it? The inspiration. It might be. Things like, is there actually the assurance of an additional service that comes with it that down the line you can actually have that upgraded or repaired? Is it actually the simple versatility of how much the different environments that you might be able to wear a product in, whether that's environmental or social different things? You know, we all know we've got that favorite piece that we can wear in lots and lots of different contexts, and probably people have brought them here to this show because we've been traveling. So if you just have a think about, what those favorite pieces are for you in your wardrobe, and why do you reach for them? You know, 9 times out of 10, we've all got a favorite T-shirt that kind of gets worn way more than the others. So here we're sort of talking about the values within the garments that we own and that we use. And what separates, what are the differences between some of these things that will stay with us for a very long time, and some of them that get discarded. So the traditional method of the take, make, dispose model within the fashion industry kind of sees a very much a one-way transaction. What we're all excited about now and seeing a lot more of is this kind of idea of circular design, both on a materials basis, but also around these immaterial ideas as well, which might see people, customers, the community start coming back for more things that might actually enable them to upgrade their purchase. Might mean that they can rejuvenate it, return it at some point for a return back to the fiber-to-fiber recycling in return for a credit or something like that. We're also seeing the advent of things like third-party redesign as well, where companies are actually buying up sneakers and starting to customize them themselves to actually add more value into this process. And the advent of the prosumer as well, actually starting to inform this design area here. So what does this mean? That the companies that are starting to own the entire space here, upstream and downstream from the retail moment, are the ones that are going to thrive and that are thriving at the moment. The companies that are starting to define this space are the ones that will be, you know, define the aesthetic that we'll be wearing in 5, 10, 15 years' time. There was a big index released a couple of weeks ago as part of Fashion Revolution Week. Fashion Revolution Week, for those that don't know, starts on the anniversary of the Rana Plaza disaster. This year was a 6th-year anniversary of that terrible day. This year, they issued a review of the top 250 fashion brands in the world and their transparency. Excuse me. And it was really interesting to see, actually, that a lot of sportswear, streetwear brands that we're all very familiar with are actually the ones that are leading the way in terms of the accountability and transparency. So consumers are finding a really reassuring space here that actually what they're investing in represents something way more than just the material side of the products that they're purchasing. I'd really recommend you to go and take a look at the index, the Fashion Revolution Index. There's some really surprising results in there. A lot of traditional fashion brands are severely lagging behind. So of these companies that are starting to look into this space, you know, what does it look like? How is it starting to manifest? What are the new aesthetics that are emerging? So really interesting to see the work through Adidas and the Speed Factory work, the idea around singularity, you know, doing more with less. Is it possible to actually just utilize one material? 2 weeks ago, the Future Loop shoe was released 100% in the same material. So this was really interesting, really exploiting what is possible, what is capable of one single material, raw material. So knitting, spinning, glueless bonding, laser etching, shaping, forming, expanding, generates a piece of footwear that conceivably could be returned and chipped and returned back into a fiber state again. There might be some people from Adidas here who can correct me on this. But it also opens up more opportunity for things like application of dye stuffs, for instance. You could buy a bright white pair of sneakers and then actually potentially over-dye them or actually rejuvenate them into a darker shade once they start wearing out. From a supply chain perspective as well, this is really effective that, you know, you just have one hopper of one material that you can do an infinite amount of things with. So for me at this point, I'd say to you as, you know, as designer creators in the audience here as well, really think properly about the materials that you're using and what it is that you can actually exploit around the material characteristics to define a new aesthetic. So again, back to this idea that consumers, they like new stuff, they like this fun stuff, new emerging aesthetics. A different type of value demonstrated through Arc'teryx. innovation of value. You know, they really celebrate the fact that, they're crafting, manufacturing, innovating actually there in their design headquarters, with ability to perfect that design at their local factory, Arc One. For consumers, being able to actually see this and understand the value, both in the performance aspect, but the price ticket, is really crucial to them then understanding and investing, actually committing to this brand and the work that they're doing. There's some great stuff actually on their website to be able to go and understand, you know, how they approach this. So products like this come off the back of it, an 80-gram ultralight trail run jacket, which probably wouldn't have been possible of working with at distance, and certainly not in the time available. Turning my attention now to Rafa. Rafa did a fantastic job. They do a fantastic job of embedding narrative into product. So the idea of product as narrative here, really, really rich offering. Everything was optimized in the name of storytelling and celebrating the sport, from fonts, color schemes, hidden story labels, online content into the digital realm, filmmaking, really created this super rich amount of value around a product that actually ensured that the products became not only physically durable, because they were extremely well made, but emotionally durable for people to love them for a long time because of the timeless design. On a tech end, doing things like embedding, again, narrative into pattern making here. The print here was generated from a Tour de France rider, where their actual stress score over the duration of the Tour de France was turned into a data graphic and applied to the print and then shot actually on the rider here who was modeling it. So again, there was a reason behind the print. There was a really good amount of storytelling. The rider could speak about their experience, and it was there. It was possible to wear this endeavor. And similarly, no pun intended, shining a light on the work of JRC Reflex, and this ability to have this actual visible another layer of aesthetic that starts appearing. At nighttime, the transformation. We've got a new, very fun visual aesthetic there. Integrated, that comes alive. So transformative garments that take on another level when they go into a different environment. So returning to color as well, they're having said that, you know, the Rafa color scheme is extremely durable, I think, and actually the products last for a very long time, often because their color schemes are versatile. They are they're easy to wear season on season. And my take on color is that sometimes sustainability is as simple as a color palette. You know, if you look around the room and actually the breadth of color that we're wearing, it's a lot of very easy muted tones here. And, you know, everything that goes into the advertising and whatever the seasonal brights. But actually, again, should we be treating color more as in the way that we do with materials and think of it actually as a tangible thing with a function? Notable that the two suits on that earlier slide, the astronaut suit and the Everest suit there, bright orange, you know, color as function there for visibility, that's actually, you know, is chosen for a very functional purpose. So I think we need to think of color sometimes more as a device that we can deploy and actually embed a lot more value into the product. But flipping out as well from the tech end of things, seeing the emergence now of a more natural aesthetic as people start to reject consumer value, sort of traditional consumer levels of synthetics. I'm really interested to see if actually there'll be a new wave of sort of color palettes now as a trend start to actually identify people, consumers, the conscientious consumers who visibly want to show, to demonstrate actually where their allegiances lie. There's a fantastic magazine called Viewpoint, and I just picked this quote out of it, which I thought really captured that idea now of people thinking much more of their product purchases than just an actual physical statement or a physical transaction, but actually visibly wanting to demonstrate and show where their affiliations lie. And none could be more so clear than, for instance, than with Patagonia, which now you could even say has become allied to a political cause. I picked this out, an example from their Warnwear Instagram feed. This chap has bought in his fly fishing vest of, which is 28 years old, which gets a free repair on it. I'd kind of argue that that is one of the most beautiful things, you know, that's been on the screen here, that this product has been loved and now is embedded with now an extra level of beauty and storytelling and narrative around it. It's quite a powerful sort of cocktail that Patagonia are putting on offer there. And as I say, people wanting to show their allegiance with now actually a political cause through their apparel choices. So for us as a business, we do three things out of the Rayburn Lab. Either remade, which is taking existing materials and exploiting their existing characteristics, so most famously parachutes into garments. Either reduced, which is where we're exploring new lower impact production methods, organic cottons, biodegradable materials, and recycled, which is exactly that, post-consumer plastic bottles generated into fiber. So everything we do as a brand will fall into one, sometimes two, potentially three of those categories. So I'm just going to take you through as a design process, something that we've applied here from everything I've just been talking about to our autumn winter collection, where we took redundant German workwear uniforms, these high-vis safety jackets. In their current form, you could wear them, but probably not that appealing within a kind of a modern fashion sense. They've been converted into outerwear garments again. Any of the offcuts from it, as a studio, our ambition is to generate absolutely no textile waste at all. So actually, we've been keeping bags of our textile waste, using them for offcut workshops and things like that. With this project, we took the offcuts from them and we've invested in an industrial shredding machine. So we were able to take the offcuts, shred them, and blend them with thermal eco down fibers, recycled insulation fibers, and put them into a recycled, very lightweight, transparent fabric. So you can actually then see the color pops coming through and translating from the origin of the material. And then we photographed the offcut insulation, generated it into a photographic print, and applied it to a recycled polyester base. So actually, you're seeing the two products here layered up. And applied it to a more commercial interpretation of the kind of high-end concept. Then we actually just did a plain black version, utilizing the high-vis flame red as well. So you could then see this very clear story happening as we build from our premium pieces throughout the range that customers could approach and get into at whatever level they were comfortable with in terms of aesthetic and price point. So the most important thing I'm going to wrap up with now is to challenge you all. As I say, you're all the creators, makers, making this industry happen. What is it that we can do as individuals, as businesses, as networks, to actually embed a lot more love into our products, whether that's longevity, emotional durability, repairability services? How do we get people to actually love and utilize that apparel as much as possible? And it's down to us as an industry to be doing this and defining that space, as I say, just within that whole network, the supply chain, up and down from the point of the transaction point. Final thing to say here is, in London, if you are in London, please do come and see us. We're open as a studio store 5 days a week. We will be running 45-minute studio tours as well, where we'll be opening up the archive, showing off kind of weird and wonderful stories from our past. follow us on social there. And then final thing is hand over to the next speakers. Please do stick around for Anna Prahl at 12:45 and Charles Ross at 1:45. And beyond that, I would say thank you ever so much for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright May 2019 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.